brought to you by Oklahoma Men's Clinic, the leader in men's health and sexual wellness.
Rick and Brad on the Cat.
Apparently, Meghan McCain has a new book out this week called Bad Republican, where she explains why she left The View, which is pretty much the reason why everybody thought that she was leaving The View. She said that it wasn't just one thing, but the last straw was, not surprisingly, Joy Behar. She says as the show's only Republican, Megan felt constantly ganged up on and mistreated, even by Whoopi Goldberg, who was an actual ally to her for the first few years.
But and you know what's interesting about that is, what's the lady's name? She was a Republican congressperson from Florida. Is it Anna Navarro? Anna something?
Yeah, she's kind of a guest host on there.
No, she's a regular host, I think.
Yeah, it's weird. She's only on there part of the week, though. But she describes the atmosphere in general as toxic and hostile, but she said that she was able to deal with all of it until she returned from having her baby. She said she was battling postpartum anxiety, and she, I think we kind of remember this. On her second day back, she had an argument with Joy, and she said, "Joy, you missed me so much when I was on maternity leave. You missed fighting with me." And then Joy replied that she did not miss her, and you could tell that she meant it.
Here is the here's the interaction you're talking
yes.
about.
I'm talking about somebody, Joy.
You missed me so much when I was on maternity leave. You missed me so much. You missed fighting with me.
I did not miss you.
Okay, somebody answer the question.
Can I weigh in?
Or I'm moving on.
I'd like to weigh in.
Like, so nasty.
Can I weigh in?
Okay, guys, rude. Like, hold on. Stop. Everybody stop.
That's so rude.
Who wouldn't want to watch that?
Nasty.
Good Lord.
Doesn't that seem fun? So obviously that hit Megan pretty hard. She said, "I didn't have the emotional bandwidth anymore to try with any of them. I thought I was part of a show where women can have the kinds of conversations that society doesn't generally make space for women to have. But for me, The View didn't feel like a pro, women show. And I didn't want to be a part of that for myself or for my daughter or for women everywhere." She said that there are some things about the show that feel stuck in 1997 when The View first went on air. And then she said, in this era of dismantling toxic work environments and refusing to accept the poor treatment of employees, how is The View still immune? I just feel like, I get that would hurt your feelings, but I just feel like she complains nonstop about how badly she's treated. And then it was funny that they tried to do this big send-off week on her last week of The View, I think, which was back in August. And she's like, "I'm just leaving, no hard feelings. There's no reason I'm leaving." And then she comes out with this book that says all of this
stuff.
Well,
she also... she was not beyond instigating fights as well. So, you know, she's talking about the toxic work environment. It might very well be, and I'm certain that she probably felt ganged up on, but you can't claim toxic work environment and also be part of the toxicity.
Agreed. Yeah.
So that's that's what rings hollow to me about it. By the way, I didn't see it. I saw that Katie Couric was on the Today Show yesterday, speaking of toxic work environments. Okay, good, because I did not see and did not hear what she had to say on there.
Yeah, she said a couple of different things. She says that she is brave to admit, or she felt brave to admit, that she has had bitter rivalries with female colleagues, and said that she's sending a copy of her soon-to-be-released memoir to Deborah Norville to show that it was nothing personal. You know, that's one of the anecdotes from this book that came out at the very beginning, that that she got territorial with other females. And she said, "I think that that's a natural human impulse, and I thought it was actually brave of me to say sometimes I felt protective." She said, "I think I was incredibly generous with my colleagues, and I never deliberately derailed any of their careers." So she said that she was going to send her, she thinks that the book is getting a lot of bad publicity because people think that she's just tearing into people, but she thinks that once people read the book and read the context that it's in, that it won't be nearly as offensive. She also talked about how She regrets her move to CBS back in 2006. She had spent 15 years at the Today Show before announcing that she would be joining CBS Evening News, becoming the first solo female anchor of a nightly news broadcast. And she stayed for 5 years. And there was a ratings decline for the evening news. And she said at the time that she made that decision to move to CBS, she said, "I kind of felt like I owed it to womankind," which is probably ridiculous in retrospect. But I just thought, I've been at the Today Show for 15 years. That's a really long time. And I've never shied away from challenges. And that's why I did it. She said, "If I knew then what I know now, I probably would not have made that move."
See, here's the difference between me and most people, because I get it. She'd been doing the Today Show. She thought it was kind of vapid. She's talking about cookbooks and other stuff as well as doing news, and she wanted to do real news, or hard news as she would put it. And so she was, and CBS came to her and said, "We'll give you a bunch of money and we're going to make you the first solo female news anchor, and we're going to make a go of this." And they gave a great pitch, and they convinced her to come over and make a go of it. I would have gotten that pitch, and I would have thought, well, nobody else has been able to make this work, so why do I think that I would be the one that's going to span this bridge and make it so that, make it so that a, in this instance, a female, whatever the situation might be, but in this instance, a female solo news anchor for the first time ever is going to be accepted and embraced and successful and supported by the network. She feels like, oh, well, okay, well, that's perfectly understandable. I've got the capacity to do that. I would go, well, nobody else has done it. There's no way I could do it. So I would have stayed at the Today Show had it been me.
She said that she...
By the way, I'm not saying I'm right. I'm just saying that's right. My nature would be to approach it that way.
Yeah, she may be a little bit more confident than you are. She said that she would have regretted staying at the Today Show for 20 or 25 years because she wanted a new challenge. She said, "I wanted to flex different muscles, so I'm glad I did it, and it didn't work out the way that I hoped it would. But what doesn't kill you makes you stronger." It was also interesting because she's talking to Al Roker yesterday. She was also talking to
Hoda
Kotb and Jenna Bush.
She did two different interviews. So she sat down with Savannah Guthrie. She sat down She sat down with Savannah Guthrie first and did an interview with her. Then she went away for a while, and then I noticed, because I had it on in studio and it was muted, and I looked up and saw that she was back, and then she was being interviewed by all those people that you just mentioned. So she did two different interviews.
She told Al Roker that there was a real culture clash when she joined CBS. She said, "I think the problem is I probably didn't change enough when I went to CBS. I was more a product of the Today Show and NBC, and I think it was a real culture clash. I don't think people internally really accepted me, and I thought we were much further along when it came to sexism." She said that when she left Today, she thought America was really ready for a female anchor of the evening news, and she said, "We were just not far along as I naively thought."
Don't you know, too, that there were a bunch of people at CBS News that were old school people, that she was the, as I put it a minute ago, the vapid morning talk show, chat show, breakfast show host, and they either, one, didn't accept her because of that, and or thought, oh, I should be the one to get this shot, and they're bringing in this woman who doesn't even deserve it because she's a breakfast show person. So I guarantee you there was a bunch of resentment from people inside the building as well. It was almost destined to fail, which I go back to me being, why do I think that I would be the one person that's going to be able to make a go of this? Yeah. And maybe it's as simple as Sumner Redstone or what's Julie Chen's husband, Les Moonves. Maybe it's as simple as one of those people making the pitch to her and saying, "Hey, we're in your corner. We're going to make this work. The network's committed to it."
Oh, I have
no doubt
they told her that. Yeah.
And then
it's so interesting how much this parallels.
That they would do what they said they would do.
It's so interesting how much this parallels the morning show, Apple TV show. I mean, just all of this reminds me, just the backstage workings at these networks and people competing for different spots and stuff. It's really interesting, specifically Jennifer Aniston's character. And even with the writing of the memoir, like what she's doing this season, and being pressured to write stuff about her co-stars. I'm kind of interested to hear more about this book, or actually I may read it, just because I really wonder if it is, there are a bunch of like clickbaity headlines about it, but once you read it, you don't feel.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
Like it's as crazy as everybody is saying that it is.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, that's obviously the pitch that she's giving. And if she's not telling the truth, people are going to figure that out pretty quick.
Yeah, you would think so. This is kind of a horrible story, or it actually definitely is a horrible story. Adrian Holmes is the guy who plays Uncle Phil in the upcoming Fresh Prince reboot. And yesterday he was involved in a car accident that resulted in fatal injuries for a man who was laying in the middle of the freeway.
Oh, geez.
On the 110 freeway, just north of Sunset Boulevard in downtown Los Angeles, when at 7:30 p.m., he was driving and was unable to avoid hitting the man. And neither could the person driving right behind him, who also made contact with the individual. This guy was pushed into the adjacent lane and then was hit by a third car. The 110 is a very busy freeway, and the John Doe suffered fatal injuries. Cops are investigating what may have led him to being out there in the first place. Drugs and alcohol are not believed to have been a factor for the drivers involved, and it's unclear if that applies to the victim, though. But yeah. What a horrible, like, I mean,
not that it's going to make
so awful
any difference to this guy, but how could you be anticipating that a guy is going to be laying in the middle of the freeway
at 7:30 at night?
Yeah, I mean, that is just horrible. I mean, I feel bad for that guy. He's going to have to carry that the rest of his life.
Awful. On a lighter note, I guess, Kate Beckinsale has revealed the cause of the back injury that sent her to the hospital last month. And she says that it was because she was trying to put on her leggings. She was on the Late Late Show Monday night, and she said it felt like a sort of guitar string snapped and everything was horrible. I couldn't walk. I couldn't lie down. I couldn't sit down. I couldn't do anything.
Rick?
Since she couldn't take herself to the ER, an ambulance had to be called. And she said they sort of rolled out a sheet, picked me up in it like a sausage, and put me on a gurney.
She's getting close to where you got a shot. Another 10 or 15 years, and you may have a shot.
You mean at getting her in a movie, or just I might have a shot?
You might have a shot. I mean, you've always loved her.
She's always been my girl, man. I flipped across Pearl Harbor the other day with Kate Beckinsale and those other guys. And stayed on it for like 20 minutes through this Kate Beckinsale scene.
God, you know you love somebody if you'll sit through that crappy movie for Kate Beckinsale. Oh, yeah. She looks good in the trailer for that. Is it Hulu? What network is that new series that she's doing on?
I didn't even know she was doing.
Yeah, she's got a. It's either a movie or a series that she's in. That's a comedy that looks pretty good, and she looks great.
She's got a pretty nice little Instagram feed going too. She posts pretty good pictures. By the way,
been creeping on her Instagram.
Oh, for sure.
I would like to go through your follows on Instagram. Her, Olivia Jade. Couple of the Real Housewives.
No. I don't have any celebrity followers, but she's
Ariana Grande.
No. I see that from plenty from my girls, but yeah. No, Kate Beckinsale for sure. I mean, I know that's cringy that I this rock morning guy is like, hey, look at Kate Beckinsale pictures.
Mila Kunis was on an episode of, get this, the Ellen DeGeneres Show's digital series, Mom Confessions.
God, Ricky, follow Mom Confessions on Instagram?
Not yet, but here we go. Let me find them.
She reveals the thing that she said to her daughter that she considered her worst parenting fail, and that something that Ashton Kutcher, her husband, completely disagreed with how she handled it.
There was a little kid in my kid's preschool that wasn't very kind and pushed my daughter. My daughter came back and she was like, "So such and such little kiddo pushed me." And I instinctually said, "Did you push her back?" And my daughter's like, "No." And I was like, "Push her back next time." You push her back and you say, "No, thank you," and you walk away. And I turned around and I see Ashton's face and he was like, "No." But I was like, "You stand up for yourself and you say, 'No, thank you.'" I was like, "Don't push him off of a ladder or off of a swing or off of a slide, but it, like on the ground, even Steven, you push him back." I'd say that that's a parenting fail.
You go into preschool the first day, right. You find the biggest kid in there and you beat their ass.
That's right. Punch him right in the
then
face.
You're good. Then you
Mila, she's in preschool. She's not going
even
to prison.
Steven. She said not off a swing or a slide. I don't really know if she
right. My dad pushed me off
wrong
a ladder
there.
And I turned out fine.
Yeah,
I don't know what you guys
did. Baseballs at me. Do you guys remember? Gosh, how long ago yeah. was that that we had those
who
callers
was it
and that guy's baseballs? Like, "My dad threw baseballs."
I don't remember.
Yeah.
It was a long time
Oh, it was
ago.
A caller of ours, right?
Yeah, it was a caller. It was like after some dad did
was,
something to his kids skateboarding.
Oh, I thought maybe it was when Adrian
about.
Peterson got in trouble for spanking his kid. But
no,
yeah, you're right.
Just
it
later.
Was a skateboarding thing.
Yeah.
Okay, so yesterday Shaq and Charles Barkley had a bit of a tiff when Shaq said that he's a better center than Wilt Chamberlain.
Dude, come on now. All right, here's the interaction.
So if you had to rank the Lakers centers, it'd be?
Go. Kareem, me, then Wilt.
Okay.
Oh, you're not Ben Wilt. Stop
I
it.
I got four.
No, stop it. Stop it. Hey, stop it. Hey, stop it. You already getting petty. You already getting petty on the first night. You're not better than Will Chamberlain. You
don't remember my ceremonies.
Hey, hey. You're not better than Will Chamberlain.
Yes, I am.
No, you're not. Stop it.
You said Will Chamberlain.
You're getting petty. Stop it.
No.
Stop it, Petty White.
Petty White.
Petty White.
Oh my God. I could listen to that over and over again.
That's different than the view with him.
Wilt Chamberlain defined the position, and I love Shaq, and I thought Shaq was a great player, but he ain't better
ceremonies?
Than Wilt. Just because you
oh
have more
God,
rings doesn't
funny.
Make you better, yeah, Petty White.
Petty White. That is fantastic. Okay, WTF. I thought Ozark was going to premiere over the summer at first, and then I had heard that it had been pushed back maybe to around November, but now Netflix has revealed the premiere date for the first half of the show's fourth and final season, and it is January 21st, 2022.
Oh my God, how much longer?
Isn't that ridiculous?
January.
And it's not even the whole season. They're splitting up. The last season. Just call it season four and then season five.
Well,
I don't understand.
The good thing is there's seven in each one. So you, in January, you'll get seven. And then whenever they do part two, there'll be another seven. Because like Billions came back and did a brand new, finally, year and a half, did five episodes and then pushed the rest of them off until like January or something. So it's kind of, at least we're getting seven.
At least, yeah. I just hope we don't have to wait a whole year for
the second one.
Part two of season four.
Hey, listen, at least we've got Succession on now. Have you guys seen the first episode?
Yes.
Kron?
Yeah. I watched it the other night.
How about your boy Kendall saying he was going to bring in a couple of the BoJack guys to create some off-the-hook posts for his feed?
I knew this so much. That was so funny.
There was so much on that first episode. I hope every episode's going to be a little bit longer than this premiere was, though. Didn't you feel like it was like 30 minutes long?
No, I really didn't feel
it was
short at all.
I mean, it was over by 8:45.
Oh, really?
Ryan said it's 58 minutes long.
Yeah, Lauren.
Really?
That's what Ryan said.
I must admit, I hope I didn't miss any part of that. It just seemed shorter than usual.
Of course, Ryan also yesterday tried to convince me that Logan is 90 years old, the guy that plays Logan. What's his name?
Yeah.
Yeah, what is
Brian,
his name? Brian Cox.
Right.
Cox, yeah.
He tried to convince me he was 90 years old, and I'm like, dude, there's no way he's 90 years old. And he goes, oh, my bad, he's 76. Oh, yeah, well, just a little.
Where did he even get that, the 90 from?
He said he read it somewhere.
Oh, okay.
He read it.
I was thinking it'd be
somewhere.
Funny if he like mistook him for somebody else. Like, oh, no, never mind. That's William Shatner. That's 90 years Born old.
In, yeah. That's funny.
That's true.
Did Brian Cox just go into space? Hello.
That's a good point.
Right.
Yeah. But yeah,
so he, doesn't he do those Priceline commercials? Or whatever that makes
him. Yeah. Kendall saying that he was talking about his... He like... You think he's back on drugs? Do we? I don't remember the end of the last season well enough, and this season jumped right into, like, it literally didn't miss a beat. From the end of the last season, this season picked up right where it left off. He really seemed to me like he was tweaking in that scene where the girl came, the social media coordinator came in, and he was saying he was going to hire a couple of the BoJack guys to... create some off
yeah, he did,
posts.
And I couldn't tell if it was like just his adrenaline from this whole situation or if he's back on drugs, but one thing is certain, he will be back on drugs
oh,
at
yeah,
some point
for sure
this season. Yeah.
All right.
Okay, guys, that is it for Showbiz News.
Thank
today.
You, Kron.
Rick and Brad on Rock 100.5, The Cat.
Every one of us have a sibling, at least a sibling, right?
Yeah, I got a couple of them.
Yes.
Well, but you really have one.
Yeah, one.
Because you didn't grow up with your sister. She's right. A lot younger, and she's a different daddy. Kron's got one.
Still your sister, though.
That she knows of. Well, but...
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now, here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band, and they must think this kid must have just handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band, like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.
For the purposes of what we're going to talk about, it,
she basically
it doesn't
grew
count.
Up an only child, but yeah, I've got a half sister. Yes,
Rick, you got multiples.
Well, yeah, I
got a whole bunch of them, don't you?
4, 5, 6, 7.
And I've got one of each.
Okay.
So, do you feel like at this point in your life you still have a sibling rivalry with any or all of your siblings?
Yeah, I would say definitely.
Yes,
with
you
my
absolutely
brother.
Do, Kron.
I don't really think so anymore.
Oh, I'm sorry. Weird. Judges say no. No.
Whoa.
Judges say that you do still have.
Okay. Because I really don't feel that way.
A little bit.
Maybe.
Just a little bit. Not as much. I will say this. In the time period that I've known you, your relationship with your sister has changed significantly.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that we, for the first time in our lives, are getting along.
Rick, what about you? But sibling rivalry doesn't mean that you don't get along. It just means that you're competitive with them about certain things. Rick, what would you say?
No, I'm not competitive with any of mine.
I'm not either. My brother was here 2 weeks ago. He came up and went to see Jason Isbell with me. And I don't have... My brother did horrible stuff to me when I was a kid. And
you're the middle or...?
Yeah, I'm right in the middle.
Okay.
And we get along fine now. I mean, I could go down a rabbit hole with you and go, yeah, I remember this one time that he did this. But in terms of feeling, I don't feel competitive with him at all. And a lot of that is because I left home a week after I graduated high school, never gone back. And I just don't have that. I just don't have that. I don't feel any sort of competition with him at all about anything.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, I think a lot of people have sibling rivalry because they are jockeying for what they're going to get when their parents go away.
Oh, my.
I don't have to have that problem.
I don't either. Listen.
I don't have that either.
My dad.
What am I going to get? Yeah. Six or eight junker cars that my old man was in the process of rebuilding? Well, what am I going to do with that?
Your dad was in the process
of
flipping.
In a lot of ways, I'm competing so that my brother has to deal with that stuff.
Right. That's the competition.
That's like my theory about, hey, I don't know where anything goes in the cabinet, so I really can't unload the dishwasher. It's not that I don't want to. I just can't. I kind of feel that way with my brother. Like, hey, man, you know, he's so much better at that stuff than I am. It'd be way better for him to deal with that.
Yeah. I mean, believe it or not, I'm the organized one in my family. So I'm going to get that. Have to deal with that, I'm sure.
Yeah, you're the executor.
Yeah.
I don't want to be.
So of the people that you know, forget about yourself. Do you think that most people, even as an adult, have a sibling rivalry with their sibling or no?
Man, I don't know about most. I would say a lot of people do.
I would say most.
A lot of people do.
Okay, let's ask it this way. In your family, are you or are you not? Rick, this is going to be tougher for you, and you don't have to specify. You don't have to get super specific about it. I will just say, I'll just phrase it as this. Are you the favorite child or not?
Ooh, I don't know. Not currently. No.
Oh, I'm not.
There have been times where I have been, for sure, for a decade or so, but I'm not currently.
Now, who are you judging that against? Your dad, your mom, your grandparents?
The collective, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
You don't think you're the favorite to any of them?
No.
Kron?
No, probably not.
You think Jamie's more the favorite than you?
Probably, yeah.
Why is that?
I gave my parents a lot of trouble when I was young.
Yeah, but that was years ago. That's, sure. That's, there's a lot that's of water under the bridge since
KBOO.
Then.
KBOO.
Yeah. I don't know. I think that she probably would be, but I think it kind of changes back and forth depending on what's going on.
I can unequivocally say I'm not, never was, never will be the favorite.
Same.
Never, ever, never. Rick, you weren't either, ever?
No. I was the bottom of the totem pole.
Me okay, and what my about
little
this?
Sister tied for last.
With your situation, with Tina?
Yeah.
With your situation, who do you think is the favorite son? Because there's so many kids in your family, it's hard to even, like, you really got to break it out brothers. By demographic.
Right. Yeah, they do span different groups. I would say both of my brothers, depending on which parent, you know? I mean, they were probably, if my older brother was around him, and when he went around, it was my younger brother. My younger brother was the popular everybody in the
right.
family. It was like, oh, he.
Right. That's that kid's guy. Going places.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know so much about this one over here, but
no,
that kid right there, he's got a future.
I was the weight, the sluggard that everybody had to deal with, still to this day.
That's kind of how I felt, too. It's like I was just the one that was there, like, yeah, you know, we had this one over here. We were trying for a girl, and we wound up with this one. And, you know, we couldn't really send him back.
And now he's mad because his name's not Alexander.
Yeah, really, right.
You wanted that to be your name.
Well, according to research, over half of people say they still feel sibling rivalries as an adult.
Yeah, I believe that.
Me and my brother get along better than we probably ever have now that we're both older. But you get us around each other for a long enough period of time, and we're competitive about whatever we're doing.
The things that they say, most people say that they are competitive about, who bought their house first, who has the biggest or the best house, career success. Mm-hmm. Sports skills, cooking skills, parenting skills, who drives the best car, who got the best grades in school, who gives the best gifts, particularly to the parents. And again, I say, you're just jockeying for who's going to get the most at the end of the road. And I'm not going to. And there's not anything to get anyway, so what am I worried about?
God, ours is so much more redneck than those examples.
Like what?
Who can change the brake pads and rotors on this side before you can?
Rotors?
You take a driver's side, I got the passenger side. We'll see who gets
see who's finished first.
Yeah. Ours is stupid stuff like that.
See, that's bad on a couple of different levels. Because
you're
doing it probably to impress your granddad, and you don't want Papa driving down the road and the lug nuts come off because you were trying to race with your brother to finish first.
I know. Right. But no, we generally don't care about who's got what, you know, car, house.
Here's what I would say in your situation that I think is at play. And you won't admit to this, but I think this, nobody probably in the equation will admit to this, but I think this is a subconscious subtext for you. And that is the fact that your brother had kids before you.
Oh, yeah, maybe so. There's a little bit of that.
Like, I know you didn't want to have kids, and like, hey, listen, if that was the barometer, I could have knocked out three or four when I was in high school. But I chose not to. I felt that was the better move.
That's kind of where I'm at.
But if that's the curve we're grading on, then yeah.
But you're absolutely right. Between all of my involved family members at this point, he's the favorite because he's got two youngins.
Right.
And that's it. It's that simple.
Yeah.
They're the reason why they come around.
Well, if you feel competitive with the siblings, you're not alone. everybody, or most people, seem to feel that way too.
Rick and Brad on Rock 100.5, The Cat.
So I was reading this. I get a couple of newsletter things, basically just emails where they can sell advertising and get me to look at it. But it's about travel, and I've got a couple of trips that I've got to take coming up. And they had what they called a travel hack in one yesterday, and I wanted to share this with you guys and see if you've ever tried it, because I can tell you from firsthand experience, I have tried this, and it maybe has worked once or twice, but the odds are not. The odds are stacked against you. The house is going to win more often than not. But they say that a way, if you're a couple and you're traveling together, to try and get a row to yourself is to book the window seat and the aisle seat, leaving the middle seat. And they say specifically if you do row 13, people are superstitious enough that they won't book in row 13. Now, the thing about that is, for that to actually work, nobody can be sitting in row 13 at all, right? Because if the person sitting in row 13 is unlucky and the plane goes down, it's not like somebody's going to go, oh, you were in row 12? Okay, fine. You're good.
Right, right.
But I can tell you I have tried this, and especially right now out of Oklahoma City, the flights are so full that every single seat is taken. And so basically you wind up with some rando fat person, i.e. me, sitting between the two of you, and you don't get the row to yourself.
Yeah.
Try it on Southwest sometimes and see how it goes. Because then you could just go, oh, okay, you could have the aisle or you could have the window, and then the other person can move over to the middle. If you book the seat on an airline that you've got to take the seat.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band and they must think this kid must have just handed everything or nepotism. Kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.
Then you got to get permission to do it, and depending on what kind of authoritarian the flight attendant is, they're like, no, you have to sit in. But I've tried this, and it doesn't, more often than not, it doesn't work. So, you know, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but that life hack has been
hacked.
That
has never worked once for me.
Either. Yeah.
I thought you were going to tell us you were going to take some clothes and a pillowcase and
no, that is that's a hack.
Yeah.
This is just basically walking past a roulette table and putting everything you got down on red or black. Or if you're Zubek, no, I bet on double zero. See?
See?
Because if it hits, I win more. That zoo is...
He's back in full force, my man.
Like, he's never missed a step.
He's not only never missed a step, he's missed out on 19 months of
That's what I was just going to say, is I've got a year and a half of him not giving me advice. And so every day, it's like a 20-minute lesson in Zoodom.
I mean, yesterday, he basically redesigned my Roth IRA for me in 5 minutes. I mean...
How's it doing for you?
I don't know. Yeah. It just happened. So we'll see.
I don't know what happened. Well, hell, I need to get in line.
I did miss Zubek.
Let me know how it goes.
I missed him too, but the fact that now I got to make up for a year and a half.
It's a little much.
I missed him, and now I'm kind of ready for another quarantine.
Well, all these people that are back forgot that we've been here this whole time.
Yes, all these people are walking the halls like, oh, my God, is it?
Yeah.
Dude, I've been here. I've been here every day. Every day.
Ready for another Zubatical.
Yes, exactly. Thank you. God, I've said this week our people came back. Well, actually, they came back last week, but there were a couple of people that were like on vacation or whatever, and so they've come back this week. And so not only did we have it last week, but now the people that were on vacation last week are back this week, and it's just more, oh, my God.
Yeah,
I'm like, get out of my way,
dude. I got stuff to
I'm
do.
Going home.
It was kind of nice, right? Just having the whole building.
I would
roam.
I would take that all the time. I think it's frustrating in special circumstances that you can't walk
when you
down
need somebody
an
and you need to deal with something right away.
But that is rare enough that I'm willing to.
Yeah, I'll
deal
take
with
that trade.
Yeah.
But yeah, I got to get to the copy machine. I got like 2 minutes left on this song. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Rick and Brad on Rock 100.5, The Cat.
We were just talking about Ryan was saying he wished he could have seen Van Halen in their prime.
Yeah.
which I was lucky enough to do a couple of times because they were they were the biggest thing going when I was in high school.
So their prime would have been the 80s, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, they broke up in 85. Like, okay, New Year's Day, 85, was when they announced that David 80s. Lee Roth was out. But then, David Lee, his first couple of solo records were basically Van Halen records, and he had that monster band that he toured with, and Sammy Hagar joined Van Halen, and they did good records. So you kind of got both for a little bit. But if you weren't, I mean, you weren't even alive before they broke up. If you weren't around in the early 80s, you weren't going to be able to have seen them in their heyday with David Lee. Yeah. But that led to Ryan talking about the tunes that his old man listened to, and it's just so so schizophrenic, but it's so small town Oklahoma.
It is. Like, he was a huge Ted Nugent fan, and then it was like massive Garth Brooks and like Brooks and Dunn. He has a closet, probably still has all those Mobettas that he was buying because Garth Brooks wore those shirts. Like,
Mobettas.
Yeah. And then it was, he listened to Foreigner. And
so he
Journey
would go from
those...
like Wang Dang Sweet Poontang into the dance.
Yeah.
Into Under a Neon Moon. Yeah, I mean, that's so Oklahoma. Like, what about Kiss? Was he a big Kiss fan?
He did like Kiss quite a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a big one. I think, no, I didn't go to that show. He went to the first, like, final tour that was in, I don't know, the late 90s,
in the 90s
or whatever.
When they put the makeup back on?
Yeah.
Did he, didn't you say your first concert was like Bad Company or something?
No, Kansas.
Oh, Kansas.
At the Wichita Falls Fairgrounds,
there
County Fairgrounds.
Yeah, oh, man. Yeah.
Saw Big Kansas. Time.
Boys, load up. If you're, go wash your hands. We're going to the Wichita Fairgrounds to see Kansas.
That's like a band getting to play at Madison Square Garden. If you're Kansas and you're playing at
Wichita Falls. You misunderstood,
Wichita Falls. I'm sorry. Scrap that.
Even worse.
Even worse.
Somehow that's worse.
Yeah, it's worse. Oh, because Wichita Falls is right down there from where y'all
are. Yeah, it is a 45-minute drive.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't load up and drive to Wichita so they could see Kansas in Kansas.
Right. Yeah.
Do you remember who was with Kansas when you saw them?
I don't. Probably a bunch of locals, I have to imagine.
Did you guys bitch about the things that didn't come to Wichita Falls but went to the BOK Center instead?
Not really.
No. I maybe heard the greatest first concert of all time the other day.
What's that?
So yours was Kansas.
Mm-hmm.
Rick, who was yours?
Gosh. Let me think. Go ahead. I don't know.
Cron?
I need to think. I was just asked this the other day.
Ricky Skaggs. Maybe worse.
What was your first rock concert?
Gosh, I couldn't even tell you. Probably like Three Doors Down or something.
I don't know what my first one was. It was probably something like the Statler Brothers. But my first rock show was Kiss. I saw Van Halen pretty early on one of my first few shows. But I was you don't know yours, Rick? You don't remember?
I do. It's the... Let me think of another one.
Well, no, be honest about it.
Atlanta Rhythm Section.
Oh, so into you.
In Amarillo.
Imaginary Lover. Wow. Was Imaginary Lover Atlanta Rhythm Section?
Yeah. That's so, right. Dude.
You didn't see a show until you moved to Amarillo?
I don't think as a kid I ever got to go to a concert, and then Temple I didn't, and then Amarillo was next. But the thing about the Amarillo Civic Center that a lot of people don't know about this ARS concert is there were, I'm not kidding you, dude, 12 people in the audience.
Wow.
Mm. And they said, we're going to play this show anyway. You guys all got front row seats. Come on down.
Great. That's cool. You were in the front row for your very first show.
I know. And I was embarrassed for them the whole time. And
so. I'm going to have to look something up here to give the full impact of why this is maybe the greatest first concert of all time that somebody was telling me about. So there's a girl that I know, lady that I know, and we were talking about first concerts as a group not too long ago.
Yeah.
And, you know, everybody kind of had a same sort of thing. Like, some of us were, I went to whatever country show. Some of them were cooler than others. Like, I saw Jerry Lee Lewis when I was a kid. Now, he was older and not really Jerry Lee any longer, but it's still kind of cool to say, I saw Jerry Lee Lewis. Johnny Cash went through a period where he was playing like any broken down auditorium that would book him for a few hundred dollars because he was just not, he went through a period of unpopularity. And still, if you said, oh, my first concert was Johnny Cash, somebody would go, hey, that's cool. Then you go, yeah, it was at the Idabel High School Auditorium, and there were 300 people there. It's not quite as cool as it seems, but it still seems pretty cool. And kind of quietly from one corner of the table, this one lady said, I was at the, and I don't remember if it was FHA or FFA or some kind of convention. I was at some 4-H something convention in Oklahoma City, and my first concert was Eddie Mecca. Now, do you guys know who Eddie Mecca is?
I don't.
Yeah, well, because she had to follow it up in order for it to really give the full impact. Because if you say Eddie Mecca, you're like, I don't really know who that is. Is that one of those 50s doo-wop people like Dion or somebody that I don't really know? Eddie Mecca was the big ragu, Carmine Ragusa, on Laverne and Shirley. And that was her first concert.
What kind of concert?
It was at whatever convention she was at. He sang and danced and did all this variety stuff that he did.
Yeah. Wow.
Fabulous.
What a random.
Fabulous. Yeah. It's the greatest first concert of all time.
I know.
What are you going to top that with? It's so random and so like, who is that? What are you talking about?
Okay, I thought of my first concert actually before.
All right, here we go. This is going to be like, oh, I saw Led Zeppelin at the State Fair Arena.
I did. No, that was Civic Center. But
no, that was Robert Plant, and you were a grown-ass man at that point. I'm talking about when you were a kid, first concert.
Harlem Globetrotters. Does that count?
No, that's not a concert.
Oh, dang it.
Who were you going to say that you thought of who your first one was?
No, that's who it was. Harlem Globetrotters.
Harlem Globetrotters. That's not a concert.
I went to something at the Fairgrounds Arena at a state fair when I was little, and I'm trying to think of what band that was. I'll think of it. It's amazing. I should know my first concert, and I know I went before when I was a kid.
You're bound to have gone to a concert before you moved to Amarillo.
Yeah, I'll think it through here.
I mean, he said this, and this just popped into my mind. Unless this happened before I was old enough to remember it, until I moved up here and started working with you guys, I had never been to the state fair.
That's feasible.
You think so?
I'd never been to the state fair until I lived here.
But I thought that was like where redneck kids went to have
that
fun.
That is where redneck kids went to have fun. You think my old man was going to drive us 4 hours to go to the state fair? No, we could go to the McCurtain County Fair and like it.
I think what's surprising for me is like we had family that lived up here. We still didn't come do this. We had multiple reasons to come up.
Did you have a fair out there in Altus Land?
I mean, we had a
carnival. Yeah, sure, there was a county fair.
Yeah, carnival.
Cakewalk.
Really,
a carnival.
Our state fair was really the Rattlesnake Derby every year.
Oh, right.
It's like the third weekend in June or something.
You see that story the other day in the news about that woman that she saw a rattlesnake go under her house and she called a wrangler? She called like a pest control guy that specialized in rattlesnakes?
Yeah.
92 rattlesnakes he got out of under her house.
Oh, my God.
I'm moving. I'm out.
Lauren. And they said because of the drought in California, they go to places like under houses because there's water.
There's
some
moisture.
And if people water their flower gardens and lawns and stuff, that frogs and toads and stuff like that, lizards go to where that moisture is to find food for them, and then the snakes go there to eat that stuff. 92 rattlesnakes under her house.
I'm out.
The toad problem, gone.
Yeah, no toad problem at all.
Rick and Brad on Rock 100.5, The Cat.
Named one of the best personal finance podcasts, The Stacking Benjamin Show with Joe and his friends makes financial literacy fun.
Work hard and save your money. That way, when you're old like me, you can buy the things that only young people can enjoy.
Squirrel watching.
You heard it here first. Get yourself a squirrel cam. Spend $30 a month on nuts, and you'll be at early retirement before you know it.
No, Piggy, this is the road to a podcast nobody listens to.
Find out more by searching The Stacking Benjamins podcast, wherever you listen.